Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Right now, get up to 20% off select online storage solutions. Put heavy-duty HDX totes to good use, protecting what's important to you. The solid, impact-resistant design prevents cracking, and the clear base and sides make items easy to find, even when the totes are stacked. Find select online shelving and tote storage up to 20% off at the Home Depot to organize every room in your home, from your garage to your attic. Visit homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the How to Hunt Deer podcast. And today, as always, I am joined by Jason. Jason, dude, good weekend?
Yeah, it was a good weekend. It was busy, just like they all are. But yeah. I was actually able to get out and turkey hunt, which was my first by myself this year. And it just so happens it's the last week of the season, too. So, got in late just because I was exhausted from working so much, but got in late yesterday morning. I went before Mother's Day, before everybody was up, and toms were gobbling everywhere. It was great. Just not anything close enough. You know, I saw a couple hens. I saw it was probably 3 or 4 hens, and I saw a couple real nice toms. And they literally, like, if I could describe it, you know, our property is – this is probably my favorite property to turkey hunt, and it's right across from my brother's house. And sure enough, you know, he's probably in there sawing logs, and they strut across the road, and then they come up on top of the ridge of the field, and I can hear toms everywhere, and they start to chill out around 7:30, 8 o'clock, you know, and I'm just waiting, waiting. I do a couple clucks and everything, and they fan up, and I'm thinking, they got 4 hens. What do they need to come in here for? You know, I just had one lone hen decoy out and thought maybe I could pull them up because they were roosted behind me to the south. And I thought I could pull them up, but they ended up looping out to the east. And So I just made a short, quick hunt of it, and that's the end of my turkey season because it's back to work. So,
yeah, yeah. My kids were begging me, "Hey, Dad, can we go out this morning? Can we go out this morning?" We were talking about it yesterday, and I was like, "Man, I felt bad." I said no because I have a lot of work to get done today and this week, but so I said no. But now I feel like I'm regretting it. Because it's really nice outside. It's a cool, crisp morning. I don't see any clouds in the sky, and I know they're out there doing their thing. But I feel bad now. Now I feel like I got to take them fishing or something today. Because we didn't do turkey hunting. So, but I didn't get the opportunity to get out as much as I'd like. We did the youth season, and then we got into sports. Man, it's just man, I went to a. We traveled from where I live to Des Moines, 2-hour drive, stayed in a hotel for 2 nights, and went to a coach pitch baseball tournament, which I think is a little much for competitive baseball when it's not real baseball. Like, here's a couple things that you can't do. You can't steal, okay? An outfielder cannot run in and tag a base. It has to be an infielder. In order to get the out, what else? You get 7 pitches, and then you can, or a strikeout, right? So a strikeout is, three pitches or 3 strikes, and so, but it's just like all this for an adult to pitch to a kid, right? And so the first game we went out there and we got destroyed. Yeah. Our team got destroyed 21-0. We didn't even get an out against the other team, and then the mercy rule hit. And then we won our second game, and then we lost our Sunday game. So it's like all of that. And, yeah, the kids maybe had fun. I think they had less fun playing baseball and more time at the hotel pool playing with each other than they did playing baseball. But. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Just like the way kids' sports are today, we talked about that. It's nuts, man.
It is crazy. So her daughter had sectionals for track on Saturday, and she happened to qualify for 2 events at state, which is this coming weekend. So it's Friday and Saturday for that. Tomorrow starts games for four of the girls' softball. My son starts baseball games on Wednesday. And so this week we have 2 games tomorrow, 1 game Wednesday, 1 game Thursday, track state on Friday and Saturday. And then we just start it all over again next week. Yeah. In the process of all this, Dan, in the process of all this, I haven't even brought light to this situation. We sold her house. So she closes on that June 6th. And then we're getting married June 21st.
Okay.
So keep all this in the back of your mind. Like, we're boxing stuff up, moving stuff, and guess where the wedding's at? At the house. So we got to have this, big extravagant thing here. And it's not going to be extravagant. It's just going to be, handful of people, family and stuff, some close friends. But there's a lot going on. Try to jam it all in there and get it done. And hopefully by July, we can set some fireworks off and be done.
There you go. Have fun, buddy.
It's nuts.
I don't envy you at all.
Yeah. So I'm going to do a shameless plug on your 2Ds, 1 podcast thing. So I started listening to it the other day. It is hilarious. I'm going to leave a lot out, but it is hilarious. So.
Yeah. So I thank you for that plug, but you didn't warn them because it is nothing like what else I do. Like, it's vulgar. No. It's inappropriate. Yes. Like, a kid can listen to this one. Yes. A kid should not listen to the other podcast that I do. So, and the reason I did that is because I needed like an outlet. I talk about deer and deer hunting so much that I wanted to just do something different, completely different. And so I started another podcast with a guy I know, and it's straight nonsense is what it is. It puts me in a good mood, and that's why I do it.
it might be nonsense to some, but it's so relatable on so many levels. And I don't know, dude. I kept looking through, like, can I listen to another one? You know, so it was, it kept me on my toes. It was definitely intriguing. I'm also intrigued about this, this other one that you have coming up.
Oh, the Man Therapy podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of intrigued by that too. So,
yeah, that's, I mean, thank you for bringing this up. You didn't have to do that, but, that is a podcast where this is going to sound real cheesy, right? But, you know, because men are, you got to be tough and you got to like, right, you got to swallow your emotions and you got to tough it out. Well, that's great, dude. You, if you can do that and hold on to that, that's great. But a lot of dudes, I think what they do is, I know that I'm guilty of it. You swallow all of the emotions down because you want to be a people pleaser, and then it comes out at times in maybe fits of rage or anger, or you don't know how to communicate with people very well because no one's ever taught you how to do that. Or, and so one of my youngest son's best friends is a therapist, counselor, and we've gotten to know each other over the years. And one day we were, you know, I walked into the coffee shop, he was already there. We sat down and we just started talking to each other. And he had, you know, he was going through his, you know, struggles with his life. I was going through some struggles with my life, and we just kind of vented to each other. And I walked away from that feeling really well. So the next time I saw him, I was like, dude, what do you think about doing a podcast about this stuff?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, let's give it a try. And so long story short, we're getting, I think June 26th. Or excuse me, not June 26th, May 26th is going to be when the first episodes start to launch. And I'm really looking forward to this because I feel, honestly, it will just, I don't know. The goal is to just talk about our problems and then hear what a therapist has to say about it and what they would do in certain scenarios. So maybe you don't necessarily need therapy, but you want to find ways to communicate better with your children, your brother, your husband, you know, your wife, your, you know, your parents, or maybe in business or in personal relationships, whatever the case is. And just be a better communicator and be a better version of yourself. I think that's kind of what we're going for on that podcast.
So, I think it's a great idea. I also like the 2Ds One podcast because, I mean, just stuff that's relatable to you, you know, and it's the same with this other one, the therapy and stuff, because it's absolute truth. I mean, a lot of times guys don't know how to communicate, you know, and that is a weak link, you know. Especially, I mean, you know, one of the things I think I heard you guys say the other day was the masculinity. It's just like disappearing. You know, and I don't know if that's, and I don't know if that's because guys don't know how to communicate or what, but anyways, I thought I'd just throw that plug out there, and I think it's great. So,
well, I appreciate that. To be like, I feel like there's, from our culture, in order to be masculine, you got to be this chest beating Neanderthal type man, which I would identify with more than anything else. But like being masculine doesn't necessarily mean you have to be some muscle bound construction worker who is, you know, jacked and, you know, that's not what masculine means. And so, yeah, anyway, there's a lot we talk about in that. And so I guess, thanks for the plug. It's on iTunes, it's on Spotify. So if you want to go check it out, check it out. But today we're going to do a hard pivot now. And we talked a little bit about aging bucks last time we talked. And I got some messages from people who were brand new and they're in the stage of their hunting career where they want to start chasing bigger, older deer because they've heard about it. They want to try it. And they're like, how do I know if the deer is, quote, in quotations, he wrote, big enough? And so number one, I don't like that. Is it big enough? If it makes you happy, you should shoot it first and foremost, right?
Yeah, I think that's a misconception with just the way we've grown up in the hunting culture of TV and, you know, shows and stuff.
Yeah. Where do you think it starts? Is there a starting point for somebody?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the starting point is literally just getting out there and learning a little bit of woodsmanship and then getting your first deer under your belt. I think that's the starting point.
Yeah. You know, this is one of those topics that I've talked about 100 times. And, you know, obviously, if you shoot a deer, you should be happy with it, right? And not like the first thing that whenever someone tells a story and they started off by saying, well, it's not the biggest. Well, if it's not the biggest, why'd you shoot it? Like, you took an animal's life and now you're disrespecting it by saying it's not big enough. And I'm guilty of that, dude. I've done that in the past.
Same.
And so, I want to be able to change that. I want to be able to say, it's okay, dude. Like, you don't have, everybody's competing with each other for some reason over this stuff. And I don't think it's necessary to do that. So I think, if you're looking to step up and shoot an older age class or a bigger antlered deer, and sometimes those two things can go hand in hand, but I think you have to start with, where do you live in the United States?
Yeah. Right? I think, reality has to, you know,
a reality check.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, are you in Maine?
Right.
Are you in Iowa? Are you in Florida? Like, where are you hunting? And then do a lot of research about what the average animal that's harvested looks like in those areas and how you, because everybody thinks like 170 is this magic number now. It's not. It's not. In Iowa, I can tell you that I know guys who are jacked out of their mind to shoot something 130.
Right.
Or bigger. Now you go up to the UP in Michigan. I talked with a guy, a taxidermist up there, and he says his average buck that comes into his shop is about 110. Mm-hmm. And so it's because that's what there is. And, you know, so I really do think the expectation has to be set, right? If you're that guy, if you're listening to this and you live in the UP and your goal is to shoot a 170, well, you might be hunting for a very long, long time before that happens.
Yeah, I 100%. I think that, you know, as humans, we default into keeping records and stuff, you know, hence the Pope and Young Club and Boone and Crockett Club. And, you know, I grew up in the era of the Realtree Monster Bucks and everything. So I hunted 3 years, my third season, I was able to harvest a deer. And, you know, he was an awesome buck. And I remember this deer weighed almost 300 pounds on the hoof, you know, 15 scoreable points. And I remember taking them to a check station back when they had the check stations, and a couple guys come out, they got to see your buck in the back of your truck and everything. And they're like, that's the biggest deer you'll ever shoot. Well, in hindsight, my second deer I shot after that one was just a little dinker 4 point, you know, and I was tickled either way, you know, but my goals always change through the years of like, okay, I want to see how many deer I can shoot, period. Or I want to see if I can shoot that big elf a doe, or next year I want to hit that 150 mark, or, you know, there was marks like that. Now going back after hunting for 25, 26 years now, I also kind of look at it like each time I get somebody else into hunting, whether it's my kids or a relative or a friend, you know, I also try to set reality with them. Like, there's no shame and shooting that first deer that you see, if that's what makes you happy.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So now we're going to move the discussion forward, and we're going to talk about the guys who are looking to shoot an older age class buck. Now, Jason, I want you to talk to me about what you look for from a characteristic standpoint of what makes an older. So, if I don't have a ton of trail camera data and I can't look at the antlers and go, okay, well, this guy, he has a torn ear. So I know he's at least 3 years old because I've had pictures of him for at least 3 years, or, you know, you have a ton of documentation. Let's say you're hunting on a piece of public or a piece of property that you've never hunted on before. And here comes a deer, coming down the trail or steps out in the field, and you need to know how old this deer is. What characteristics are you looking for on this buck that tells you he's quote unquote old or not?
One of the biggest things I look at is like in their brisket. The older they get like a knob in their brisket. And it'll, if their legs are parallel with each other, that brisket will stick out almost like it's a protruding from its chest. The next part I go to is their back. You know, do they have an arch in their back? Do, you know, does this deer look like
a sway?
Like a sway, right. A sway. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Does it have a sway?
You'll see
in
it in
back?
Cattle sometimes.
Yep. 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 Because when they start to, like, we have an older horse here. So you can really tell that he's been ridden. He's older. He's got an arch in his back, you know. But then even watching these cows that we got, it's the same thing. As they get older, they get a sway in their back. Their belly starts to drop. They get wider. You know, if you have the opportunity to compare multiple deer out in the field in front of you, that's one thing. If you only have one deer in front of you, if it's a buck, also start to look at the tail end of it. Does it look like a racehorse? Because, I mean, a racehorse is going to be, you know, ready to take off, one of the fastest ones, and it's generally a younger H-class deer. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to have that sleek back. It's going to come right down to their rump, and it's going to look like a racehorse, literally. Yeah. But another thing I look at, and I don't know that there's any correlation to it, is the body length. I know that there's shorter deer, you know, from butt to head, or head to butt, however you want to say it. They're shorter deer, and I've seen mature deer be the same way because that could be a genetic thing. If I don't have any pre or post scouting in on this particular piece of property and I am going to just see one deer, I'm going to look at the brisket, the back, the belly, and potentially the body length. To me, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's hard to know what you're looking at. Obviously, the internet has a ton of examples, so that's a great place to start. But what happens is you maybe run into something and you're like, okay, I got antlers coming down the right. trail, or antlers have stepped out. Oh, they're pretty good antlers, and maybe I should shoot them. Okay, well, go do it. Great. Right. If that's what trips your trigger, great. But if you're looking to take a step up, trigger control is very hard. I still have a problem with that, where there's times where a beautiful 3-year-old will step out where I'm from, and they will trigger something in me that I'm like, you got to shoot this buck. You got to shoot this buck. But I go right. back to the characteristics that you talked about. Does this, it almost looks like a teenage boy where they're thinner. Right. They're longer. They look lanky. Sometimes their mass hasn't sunk in to them yet. And right. a lot of times a 2- and 3-year-old whitetail will look like that. And it's okay. not until a deer gets to its 4-year-old self, 5, 6 and older, where you start to see mass. Here is an interesting fact that a deer breeder taught me about. I don't know if he's necessarily a breeder, but what he does is he collects their urine and sells the urine, Sam Calora. And here's what he's told me. He goes, the skeletal system of a whitetail buck stops growing its 4th year. Okay. So it is the skeletal system is no longer expanding. After or 4-year-old and after. So a 3-year-old deer, you know, you hear people say, that's a mature buck in my area. Well, no, it's not a mature buck. A mature buck is a 4-year-old, period. All right. Right? Across anything, right? But some of it has to do with genetics. Time has a lot to do with their age class. But what you'll see is from that point on, their skeletal system stops growing, and now it becomes putting muscle mass on, fat on. And so that's when you start to see the larger bodies, because the skeletal system stops growing and they start looking like a pit bull, more of a pit bull, big front end. You know, they kind of walk a little bit different even because they've put more weight on their body, and they get rid of this long, lean looking form that kind of walks, you know, walks in front of you. So one thing that I would say is, first off, try to compare the size of the bodies to another buck that might be in the area or in the field in front of you. Right. Because I'll tell you this, that where I live and where I hunt, I know when a 4-year-old steps out. Like, I know when a 4-year-old steps out because his body is so much bigger than every other deer that's in the area. Do you happen to notice a coat change, like a color change in their coat when they hit an older age class as well?
Yeah, I think it's a thicker coat, but it's also turns a little bit of a gray to it. You know, maybe right. It's just dirtier, mm-hmm. You know, because the only time they're really getting washed is when it rains or whatever. Oh, one thing I forgot that I do look at and pay attention to is the length of their legs. So as you were saying, mm-hmm. Their skeletal system's done growing by 4, and all they're doing is putting weight on. The older they get, the shorter their legs appear.
Yeah. Because their gut's getting bigger and their chest is getting bigger and their yep. rump is all getting bigger. Right. So the appearance of the legs looks smaller.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, at last light, but maybe it's 30 minutes before shooting light ends, you put your binos up and you can see maybe a herd of deer out in a field. I always feel like the older does, especially when you get from a 3-year-old to a 4-year-old, the coat turns darker. Mm-hmm. It's like a darker coat, but then you go from mature to old. It's like a mix of dark and then turns grayish as well. And so it's like my beard. I got white hair in my beard.
Same.
And I feel like you can definitely look at a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old buck, and you look at their face, and it just looks like it's an old man's face.
Yeah, I definitely say facial features in the hair around the nose and the head and everything, they get gray in it, and you can definitely tell a difference in, I mean, for sure, a year or 2 years difference.
Right, right. What about now, this is the tricky part. What about characteristics of antlers? For if I was to try to guess an age class based off of an antler or maybe a shed I found, like what kind of deer does this go to?
Okay, so the one thing like I've always used as far as like I'll call it like field judging or stand judging. Right. You know, when I see a deer walk out, basically a mature whitetail buck from tip to tip on his ears is about 16 inches wide. And then there's other measurements that you can use, which is his ear. His ear is anywhere from 7.5 to 8 inches long. The corner of his eye to the tip of his nose is about 7 3/4. The circumference of their eye is, you know, another measurement that you can use. Use all those measurements, and you can correlate that to your bases of your antlers, the length of your beams. You know, we always used to call it depth. You know, so from where they start on their pedicle there, and that beam comes out, how much depth does he have? Does he go past his tip of his nose? You know, so he would have long beams. How wide is he? You know, because I always start to look at if he's inside his ears, you know, or if he's outside his ears, how wide of a deer is he? How tall is he? And use those measurements and you can pretty much judge, you know, this deer is going to be a 130 class deer or how thick is he? That if I start to put in, that's probably the biggest one that I put weight in as far as age is how much mass does he have?
Yeah. Yeah. I think mass is a huge role. But there's times, check this out. Sam Calora, the guy who taught me about that on one of his properties one year, I think for a period of time, he held the archery world record whitetail. Okay. And he told me he always felt that this was a 3-year-old deer that grew a 200 and whatever inch rack, you know, well into the 200s. And so it's hard to try and pick the antlers because down south, right, the antlers don't necessarily, let's just say the swamps of Louisiana, those antlers aren't getting like huge. Or in Texas, you have a smaller body because of the heat. And so every animal looks like it's a giant coming through when in reality, it's, you know, probably 140 class deer.
Right.
But then you have a Saskatchewan 4-year-old. Shit, they're going to be in the 300 pound range.
350.
Like, yep. If not 350. I mean, huge bodied deer. And so, you know, a 170 on a 200 inch deer and a 170 on a 350 inch deer, that's a whole nother deer added to that body. And it's going to make that 170 look small. I don't know if you've ever seen a taxidermied buck from Saskatchewan and how they have to do. I was talking to a taxidermist the other day and how they have to do form splits.
Yeah.
Where they got to cut the form in half at the body and then widen it out.
Yeah.
But then now they've started making forms for specific giant bodied whitetail. And even when you put some of these deer in a row, like if I put a Texas buck next to an Iowa buck next to a Saskatchewan buck, you can see the difference in the body sizes that these deer have.
Well, 50
what have you noticed?
If I was going to say 50, 50 pounds on an animal is a lot when you figure that their legs are basically stilts, you know, so that's all in its body and in its neck. And if you shoot this deer, just say you shoot it Halloween, first week of November, he's full rut. He's got a huge neck. There's all that extra mass. And, you know, it's unreal what they look like in September or, you know, say February when they're run down.
Yep. And so, what was the other thing? When we're talking about antlers, right? This is just a generalization. So what I've seen is, you know, a 2-year-old buck grows whatever he grows, right? And then the next year he comes into three-year-old range, and his antlers could potentially, like, I don't even know if I want to really talk about how to judge deer with antlers, because everything I'm about to say, I can prove myself wrong by giving an example of another deer that I've shot in 2020. No, what year was it? Was it 17? It was either 17 or 19. I think it was 17. I shot a buck that came through and I looked at his antlers compared to his body. And we talked about this.
Uh-huh.
I shot him. And I would go, giant. I just stroked a giant.
Yep.
And then I walked up on him and I'm like, this body is very tiny. He just had superior genetics and he was well fed. Right. And so I shot him on the fringe of a farm that was notorious for, you know, feeding deer all year round, tons of food plots, things like that. And then the farm that I shot this buck on, he just happened to cross over. And so I shot him. And he was not mature. But I mounted him because it was, you know, still a great hunt, a great experience. And I don't regret any of it at all. But that's a perfect example of trying to judge deer based off of his antlers and not his body. And I killed a 2-year-old that in two more years could have been that 200-inch buck. Right.
Right.
And so if you're looking to do that, right, I would be very weary of trying to judge a deer's age based off of their antler size. However, there are some things that I have seen that trend in that direction, and one of them is pedicle size and extra little kickers and junk, right? That's what I've seen over the years. Like a deer hits three, let's say he's a typical 8-pointer. Well, he makes it to 4 and now he's got a split brow. He makes it to 5 and now he's got 2 split brows, a split G2, and maybe there's some junk coming off his pedicles, like some eye guard looking things. And so I feel like if a deer is healthy, you're going to see a little more mass. You're going to see a little bit more character as far as points, pedicle size. You know, if you're going from the size of a quarter to the size of the, you know, the base of a pop can, that's an indicator that that buck could be an older age class deer. Could. Not is, could.
Yeah, I was going to say, a friend of mine, he has raised deer for 25 or 30 years. And one of the biggest things he says, you know, is the mass of the pedicle. But then it's all the little extra points coming off of that pedicle, you know, in between the bases and his brows. All that adds into the age. I would say if this is your first time going out, and I would put time of year into perspective too, you know, because just as we were just talking, a deer in September is going to look different than he does in October, but he's also going to look different come the end of December and into January. So perspective-wise there, you can only age it to some extent. if that deer's run down, and it could be an attitude thing too. You know, is this buck a bully buck where he is chasing every buck out of there? He's fighting, you know, so he's going to be run down body wise more than another right. deer that might go out and might just eat all night and just wait for that one doe to walk by him. You know, so that right. that has to be put into perspective.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, I feel like, you know, you'll know, and maybe you don't, like, if I just know that there's times, and I think one thing that I do a poor job of is looking back to when I was a new hunter or within the first, because I was not good at hunting for the first 7 to 10 years of my life. Like it took me a long time to get to the point where it started clicking for me. I knew where I needed to be. I knew what a mature whitetail looked like. I messed up on a lot of big deer in that time frame. And I think what's happened is that has led to me those experiences to be better judge of deer, being calm around a bigger and older age class deer, how to handle a deer when things don't go right. Like if they stop and they're tense, are they tense because they smelled you? Are they tense because they saw a coyote? Or like, what is going on that's making them act the way they act? The other key indicator that I feel, and I want you, is let's say a deer's walking down the, a trail, and something in the bushes rustles. Maybe it's you. Maybe it's another, like a coyote or another deer or a raccoon. A younger deer, whether it's a doe or a buck, will take a shorter amount of time to evaluate that disturbance and then continue to move through the area if they deem it not a threat. Meanwhile, a larger buck, I have video footage of a deer catching me in the tree stand moving, who's probably a 4 or 5 year old whitetail, and he stood there motionless for 40 minutes. And I mean motionless. This buck did not move a muscle for 40 minutes, and he looked right at me for 40 minutes. Right? Yeah. That's an indicator, I feel, of an older age class deer and the patience that they have in order to survive.
Absolutely. The one big thing that, you know, a deer is going to do is going to eat, and then it's going to survive. That's its main goal. You know, so if a deer thinks that it can get away with just standing there or just bedding down and letting you walk by or do what you're going to do, it's going to do everything it possibly can to not move and to pick you apart. And to see your eyes, you know, to see you flinch or to hear, you know, hiccup or anything like that. That's what they're waiting for. They're waiting for you to screw up. This last fall, I had was doing a rattle sequence, and it was a blind rattle, but I knew there was deer on their feet and stuff. I'd seen them earlier, and I'm sitting there blind rattle. Pretty soon, the biggest buck on the farm shows up, and he's coming from the north. He's looping around, and he's hitting these trees. He's making a scrape. I screwed up, 20 some years of hunting, screwed up. I waited too long on this deer before I decided to stand up. As I go to stand up, my elbow pops. This deer's at 15 yards now. And I mean, he's a gigantic 8-point, gigantic frame. And he just, boop, looks at me and gone. Not like sprint right out of there, but he just trotted off. Like he knew that's enough. I already know what you are. And I go back 1 year before, I was hunting the same exact stand, same exact location. Another area where I can blind rattle, this same buck comes up from the south. And as he's starting to head east, he's coming east. And I just slowly turn and I just give him a short grunt just to see if I can get him to come in. And what's he do? He stands there for 5-10 minutes, just stands there, staring in that direction, waiting, hoping he can see another buck to make him commit in that direction. He never saw that other buck, so he just ventured off to the east. Never did end up seeing that deer again that morning. You know, so I think there's different ways that you can go about it, but the one thing I was thinking about when you were talking there is you got to be able to learn from your successes and your failures with it. And if you can't learn from both of those, I don't think it balances out to where you achieve each year. You know, each year I have, right. I can mark it down, like where I felt like I had success in it, whether it was aging a deer or whether it was actually harvesting a deer. I can also look at it like I had a failure in it. Like, oh, I forgot how I made a rookie mistake again this year. You know, I called at a deer that was less than 100 yards from me, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. And a lot of that stuff happens in the heat of the moment, you know?
Right. Yeah. And so, I mean, obviously behavior is a key indicator of a deer's age as well. I just don't think big bucks come into rattling. Like it has to be a perfect scenario for an older age class whitetail to come in, because they don't need to fight.
Yeah.
They've already established their dominance. They come in, if they want a breed of doe, they'll come in and look at a doe, and they'll just push the other buck that's already on them off, or right. they're not afraid to fight. Right. I'm the big dog. You got to come through me to get this doe. And then you read about the statistics of how many does they think a whitetail breeds in a year, a mature buck. And it's like two, right? And so we think of the rut as an orgy, like, on crystal meth, like it's just like just crazy rut. Yeah. And sometimes it can feel like that, but it's really not. A big buck will go breed a doe, and then he'll chill until he'll go, and then kind of go back to this, I got to do a little eating, I'm going to rest a little bit, and then he'll go on another doe. Right. But it's not like these big giant bucks are just smashing every single doe in the woods. They take their time, they make sure they breed one, and then they'll, I don't know if it's like what they call a recovery time.
Yeah, pretty much.
But take a nap, you know, chill out, watch a football game, and then, you know, go back and try to find another one. I just, like, the more you read about what the behavior of big bucks, they're not in a hurry. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like they're in a rush. But now a three-year-old, they're the college guys of the woods, right? Yeah. They are trying to smash everything that's in the woods. They come into the rattles. They will be the buck that tries to breed as many does as, you know, is chasing deer before chasing a doe before she's ready, coming in, bumping doe herds, scent checking. Meanwhile, the mature buck, he's scent checking, but he's not chasing because he knows they're not ready yet. And I know that when they are ready, I can just take what I want.
Well, that's just it. Those deer have lived in that area for how long? They know when that first doe comes into estrus. If he's ready and he wants to chase, or he wants to whatever, he knows he can go pick up one. You know, I don't know. I've heard different studies on, you know, guys saying, oh yeah, big mature bucks, they'll breed seven does. And I still have yet to really see that. You know, maybe there's areas that happens in, but I'm kind of with you. Like, they are going to breed two, maybe three does on average. I don't think it's really much more than that, because they don't have the energy to do much more than that. I mean, it takes a lot of physical energy for them to chase, to fight, to, you know, full circle again, do it again and do it again. So I don't think a buck could almost run himself ragged or dead if he was to do that.
Right. I don't know, man. It's just the more I learn about old deer, is that when you're talking about age class, antlers have nothing to do with it, right? That's the least amount. It's a benefit of getting old.
Right.
And their behavior is just like, they are so calm and calculated in their approach. Now, yes, if they are on a doe and you see, I've seen deer, like some of the deer that I've killed that are hanging on my wall, they made mistakes because they were drunk in love, right? Yep. They're just, they came into the grunt. Like, I've killed a lot of deer with just a single, and that's it. Yep. They're like, who's this in my woods? You turn them and they come in. Like, I've killed several deer like that. And I don't know, man. I just, the more, I'm repeating myself now, but the more you learn about big bucks, there's a reason that they're harder to kill. And it's because they are so patient and they're so calculated and they move through the terrain in a way that protects them, right?
Yeah.
They can walk through unseen if you're not paying attention to them. And they're 250 pounds with giant antlers on their head.
Yep. Hitting everything. You know, they can walk through a cornfield and you can't distinguish the difference between a buck hitting every corn row or the wind rustling through there. You know,
exactly.
I think for a guy that's wanting to try to maybe learn a little bit more about the deer and be able to see what the differences is, you know, obviously I don't get paid for this plug here, but Ryan Kirby Art does a very amazing job with his artwork of the age class of deer. The antlers, the one I got is a non-typical and a typical, and then they've got the anatomy of the deer. The three posters he's got of the white-tailed deer are pretty fascinating when you actually take the time to look at them. If you want to learn, you know, how to look at that deer when he goes from 1 to 6 years old, he shows you. So I would look into something like that, you know, but as far as like these big mature bucks, like you were saying with how they walk through the woods and everything, you know, simple is better when it comes to hunting a big mature buck. You do talk about that one grunt. I killed the biggest buck behind me here over my shoulder, and, you know, he's not quite 170, and that deer got killed because of a one grunt sequence. You know, he came in because of other deer, and then he left, and then a half hour later, he came in working a scrape and stuff, and I heard him grunt, and then I grunt, and then he's at 20 yards, and it was simple. You know, there was nothing complex about it. The less is more.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm actually, that's a great reference to that, right? Ryan Kirby, the actual name of that is called The Growth and Maturity of the White-Tailed Buck, and it shows the 1.5-year-old to the 5.5-year-old. One thing that's always frustrated me is we're like, oh, that buck's 5.5. Okay, why do we have to add the half to that?
Dude, I don't know.
It's a 5-year-old deer.
Yep.
He's 5.5 because he was born in the spring.
Right.
Like, I don't go around saying I'm 44.5.
Right, right. Okay. Yep.
I'm 44
in 8 months.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't know. And so, I don't know. I always found that funny, you know, weird that guys some guys always add the half in there.
Yeah.
I don't do that. Yeah. I don't know. Anything else about physical attributes or behavior that we need to talk about with mature deer?
I mean, you could pretty much tell if you have a field of deer in front of you, you can tell that all the other deer know when that big buck comes out.
It's almost like a sign of respect.
It is. They roll the carpet out for them, and then you'll see the young bucks. They get nervous. They start, you know, I got to get out of here. But then, you know, some of that too is the attitude of the deer. You know, because I've seen some old bucks that they come out and they're not interested in pushing you around. They're not interested in fighting. They're there for two things. They're going to eat and they want to have sex.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds a lot like me. Anyway, they walking into a field and watching that is amazing, right? Where a big buck, especially if he's got a huge rack, steps out into a field, all the heads of the deer come up, unless it's another like mature doe, right? They look. They identify, they go back to eating, but then that buck steps into the field and he will sometimes walk up to a doe or a buck and bump them from where they're standing just to show like, dude, this is my field.
Right.
Like
right.
I'm in charge. And then you'll see some of these other deer start to get nervous around him. And so, this is just something I've witnessed when I started hunting this particular farm where there's a higher age class of deer, period. So even the does are of higher age class. And you think about it, you think, oh, this big bad buck, he's in charge. Dude, there's a doe out there who I probably should shoot, but I don't know because she pegs me every year. She knows exactly where I'm at for some reason. She always avoids me. I don't know why or how she knows this, but she will not take shit from any deer. So it's almost like another doe group comes into her little feeding area, and yep. she'll put her ears back and she'll walk up to the other group of does, and they'll kind of spread out. Yep. Big buck shows up and she's not ready to breed. She doesn't run. She'll almost like, I don't want to say posture up, but she will like turn and face them, almost like get away from me. Yeah. And then they won't. And even like big, they don't get nervous around the big mature bucks.
No.
For some reason, if you look at that.
No.
If you observe that.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a thing too. Like whenever you're hunting like a fence line and you're watching a destination food source or whatever, all those deer out in front of you, they've already, and I'm going to say punched the time clock, right? They've already come out of the woods. They've walked through a scrape. They've made their scent known. Okay. So all the deer that are still in the woods, they're going to smell it as soon as they walk by for one. But then the deer that are standing out in the field, they hear everything, they see everything, and they smell everything. So everything that we can't hear, see, or smell, they can actually do that. So when you see those deer flickering and they're turning back to the woods, they're looking, you know something's coming. And they know that moment that big buck is going to come out. And he's going to stand in the shadow for a minute, and he's going to stand at the edge, and he's going to look. It's almost like he's waiting to cross the road, you know? And then he made his appearance. Here I am. It is pretty jaw-dropping to watch that actually happen. That's one of the coolest things with the quote-unquote hierarchy. And it's the same with the does. I've literally watched these does, you know, get on their hind hooves and just fight each other back and forth. And you always wonder, like, is that their way of saying, get off of my turf?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's got to be.
Yeah.
It's got – dude, I have seen – I'm guessing what happened was this fawn – this fawn's mom got hit by a car, and it was during the hunting season. So I'm guessing she was off milk already. Uh-huh. And so I watched another doe with two fawns, like probably a 2 year old. So like, I'm guessing the mom was like a 4 year old, and she had a 2 year old doe and then a set of twin yearlings that were with her. And this other fawn, this yearling, was trying to come in and mingle with them. And she just started beating the shit out of her. Uh-huh. To the point where I thought this doe was going to kill this other fawn for trying to come into this doe group.
Yeah.
And so it's like, no, we don't want it. We don't want you here. And so there's definitely a hierarchy in the woods when it comes to does as well and who's in charge there.
Yeah. And I think if you pay attention to that too, you can pretty much tell that the alpha male versus like the, what's the word for the doe? I'm drawing a blank.
Omega?
Omega doe. Yeah, I don't
beta,
know what you would
Whatever, yeah. I don't.
So anyways, like the head, the queen doe, let's just say.
Yeah.
You can tell.
Doe. I like that.
Yeah, queen doe. So you can tell the difference between like her and him. You know, she will actually still control him. You know what I mean? The power runs through her. She will control that whole entire herd. And if you want to outsmart a deer, that's the smartest one to hunt.
Yep. So I was talking to a guy about what does you should shoot every year. He's like, and he was talking to me about, he doesn't like to shoot the alpha doe or the queen doe, because they are the ones that come into heat the same time every year. So when he goes out and starts to look for, you know, like what time of year you should be out in the stands. And this is kind of the mentality that I've had on how I kill my bucks. And that is you're hunting doe groups. And then at certain times of year, big dogs start to follow these doe groups.
Right.
And if you can catch a doe that comes into the same time of year, you're almost fishing with her.
She's your bait.
And then you just have to hunt this doe, and maybe you can get in there multiple times without her catching your scent. You can get in there and you can do something really special with that particular doe, because at some point if she comes in at the same time every year, then it's just a matter of time before that big mature buck is behind her. Because guess who's getting first dibs on that first doe? It's the biggest, oldest, dominant buck.
Absolutely.
It's the dominant buck.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, if guys are using trail cameras and using mock scrapes or rope systems or whatever you're using, mm-hmm. if you're using that to the best of your abilities, it's not only to inventory your bucks, but it's also to watch the patterns and the activities with the doe, because the doe will ramp up her activity in round scrapes as soon as she's starting to get close. She's kicked her fawns off. She's ready. You know, those are the things that I really pay attention to. And I could pretty much tell you on three or four different properties when that first doe is going to come in and then when the majority of them come in. And it's because you're just being selective of which does you actually shoot. And so to his point, it's absolutely correct. You know, if you have a doe that's on your property that's 5 years old, man, let her go, because she's going to come back in next year. She's going to come back in next year. And if you saw a pattern on your cameras, or if you saw a pattern in your tree stand of like what the bucks were doing, say October 24th, I mean, maybe that was your sign. So I'll kind of wrap this up with where I have seen big bucks live. Because we talked about this before we got on air.
The behavior, the age class, things like that. Yeah.
Yep. So I'm going to put myself in a big buck's shoes. I'm getting older. I'm getting gray in my face. The less interaction with people, right? So where I'm not threatened, where I don't have to feel like I'm constantly on guard, something secluded, you know, so when you talk about like seclusion, it doesn't always mean in the thickest, nastiest briar. It could be in a waterway that's, you know, a mile from your woods. Put yourself in a backyard in an urban setting. I mean, if that buck is not threatened, he might bed right up next to your garage. You know, as long as he's not threatened by other hunters or other people, and people just pass by him and he can sit there for 40 minutes on end, he's fine. You know, so finding those big bucks is sometimes you got to think outside the box, not necessarily like, oh, I got to be in the big, thick woods. Maybe sometimes it's driving down a country road and realizing that there's a little subdivision over here and they got a little green space back there, you know, pulling up with binoculars and look, oh, there he is. He's bedded along a fence line, you know, because he's not, nobody's in his neighborhood.
Yeah. I feel like deer, as they get older, get really good at assessing threat. Uh-huh. And what I mean by that is a tractor comes by, or a car drives by, even a coyote runs by, it's not going to spook them.
Right.
Right. They kind of know, hey, this is a threat or not. Now, somebody comes stumbling through the woods, huge threat. They get a scent, nose full of human, huge threat. They're gone. Right. And that can impact their behavior for the next couple days. But I feel like, and I've seen it firsthand, where, dude, I've watched a combining corn. And for all of you who have never heard a combine combining corn, it is extremely loud and you can hear it from thousands of yards away. Uh-huh. And I watched a buck in a fence line sit there 40 yards from a combine and just chew his cud as this combine starts to make laps around. He all didn't right. move at all. He was sitting on the edge of a this little marsh area I saw him come in that morning, he bedded down and I could see his head and antlers. And so I sat there and maybe I tried to call at him a little bit to, you know, see what he would do. Didn't move. And combine starts coming through and just completely just, you know, like combines the whole field. That deer was not nervous at all, at all.
I'll give you two little examples of, so back several years ago, before they started putting all the emissions on diesel trucks, you could actually take a diesel truck around a field and deer would not move. I mean, you could literally drive a diesel truck right by them. Now you'd get in a gas vehicle and there was a sound difference to them, you know, and it correlates to the farm equipment being in these fields. Same as if take a bicycle. Ride a bicycle through the woods or past the woods, or stop and walk and look and walk and look. What's a deer going to do? You know, there's certain things that you can get away with when hunting them. You know, if you have an opportunity and you want to get into a spot and somebody can drop you off with a tractor, definitely have them drop you off with a tractor. You know, it's it's a win-win situation. So,
right. And it's just conditioning, right? That's what it is. It's conditioning. Yeah. So they will feel very comfortable around certain noises, active farms, highways, state parks, you know, even in like the suburbs where you got some of these guys shooting big deer. The reason that these deer are more killable is because they have less threats and they're comfortable around people, right? And so they like when you go into those scenarios, dude, it's easier to kill those deers because they're conditioned to not be afraid of what you are. Like their assessment as of threat is different than what your a farm country or a southern like wide open spaces type deer is. There's more threats to them, and so I don't know, man. It's just they're so good at assessing threats. The older they get, they become harder to kill in certain scenarios because they don't spook or jump when certain noises come through, or they can leave an area because they're so good at using their environment to hide themselves. You could walk through the timber, jump them, and them leave without you even knowing it or hearing them.
Right.
And so I don't know about you, but have you ever heard the difference between maybe a younger buck or a doe run away versus a bigger, older, mature buck run away?
A bigger mature buck.
Have you noticed the difference?
Yeah. So a bigger mature buck to me, he's going to slip away. He's not going
slipping. Yeah. Exactly.
He's not going to make a scene. You know. So I'm going to go back to the intrusion or feeling comfortable. So my last house that I lived in several years ago, it was a 3-acre piece. It was long and skinny, and then there was houses on either side of it, and it went. It's almost like a subdivision, but everything had to be in 3 to 5 acre lots. And so the road was lined with these houses. And then I had a piece of property north of there that I could hunt. And it was like a 50, 60 acre piece of property. So I had cameras at both places and camera in my backyard. I'd get these beautiful big mature bucks. You know, I had a little small food plot back there. I had permission from my neighbors. You know, if I shot a deer and it ran onto theirs, I could, you know, pick it up, whatever. I would literally get those pictures in my backyard or sit in my back, you know, porch or whatever and watch these deer feel comfortable in my backyard versus I could go up to this property that I could hunt that was solid timber. I had fence lines I could hunt and everything. And I would not see those same deer, but yet I would see them on camera, you know, and it was all the fact that they felt comfortable or in and around those houses and people because they weren't threatened there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think where they bed throughout the day also plays a huge role in their survival. And, you know, you get the obvious ones as once you get into really knowing woodsmanship and understanding deer behavior, I think everybody can kind of where a deer beds, not how he moves through the woods, but where he beds is a really big indicator of their maturity. For one reason, it's because I feel like a mature buck is willing to check boxes, meaning I got my scent over coming over a terrain feature. I'm hidden very well. I can smell very well and I can see. So the two big ones are smell and sight, right? But I feel like hearing is different for them because they're so good with their nose. That's a threat. That's red flag number one.
Right.
If they smell you, they're gone.
Right.
If they hear you, they might not even jump up. They might just sit and watch you. Because I've seen that before where I'm walking through the woods and maybe I catch them off guard just a little bit, but they don't run because they know it's going to attract attention to them.
Right.
So I see the antlers, especially mule deer hunting.
Yep.
They'll sit and watch you walk straight by, and then you might even be able to dip out of their sight and come around and flank them again. if they decide not to move. Anyway, what I'm getting at, especially with whitetails, is as long as they have where they can smell coming from their blind side, see coming from everywhere else, and hear, then I feel like the terrain itself or the vegetation doesn't necessarily need to be as thick or as coversome if they feel comfortable in open places, especially like in Nebraska or South Dakota or places where there is less cover. They can get away with that because they will allow something to get extremely close to them before they split. But when they do split, then they're gone. Like, well, there's no, yeah.
You know, so I mean, that's part of their biggest defense. I mean, biggest of their defenses, you listed their eyes, their ears, their nose. Well, one other defense is simply not moving. But then the other side of that is how fast they can move when they have to move. You know, so yes. For me, if you're trying to dissect, like, where is this big buck? You know, I see his tracks and everything. Don't be afraid to look up that waterway or in a terrace or whatever, because he knows that he can sit in that wide open. And as long as he doesn't move, you're probably not going to see him. But if you do see him, he can get out of there faster than you can get to him.
Right. Right. Yeah. I feel like they're so good at being able to be hidden in wide open spaces, even.
Right.
I mean, you and I know that from just like mule deer. Now you add cover to that, and now they're almost invisible in certain areas where I mean, how many stories have you heard throughout the years where a farmer or some guy running cattle will be like, I didn't know there was deer in there. And there's a giant that just has lived his whole life in a pocket and no one knew about him until he got really big. You know, maybe no one paid attention to him until he was big.
And that's why, you know, we go back a few months ago when we were talking about hunting smaller properties, is I don't feel like, in my opinion, that you have to have that big setting, that big woods or whatever. I feel like you just have to put in a little legwork or vehicle work and try to figure out, where would I want to be if I was a big buck? And think outside of the box. Don't think about where the lush food plot is. Don't think about necessarily where the big timber is, but think outside of the box. What leads to what? Does he have food, water, and a little bit of shelter? He's probably going to be good.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm trying to think of anything else that, you know, but obviously deer love, if they can, they love thick stuff, right? They love being in an area where they can just maybe even move around a little bit and feel extremely comfortable. So it's one of those things where, if you can find the cover, the food, the water, all that stuff, then more than likely there's going to be a deer in there that, I mean, it's just like does. The buck, if a buck thinks that this bed or bedding area or fence line or draw tip, that I don't know, wherever big bucks like to bed, the thing about it is if it's good, then you're going to find a potential dominant buck there, because just like he who gets the first, you know, a big mature buck will get the first doe. They also have their pick of where they want to bed too. Right. And so if it's the best bedding area, acre to, you know, half acre, quarter acre, there is a hierarchy for bedding as well. I feel anyway.
I absolutely, and I would go to the extent of saying that all of these properties that are good areas, you know, this year, whether that buck gets taken or not, next year it's still going to be a good area because deer like good areas, you know. So even if you take a deer off, doesn't mean it's not going to be good the following year. It's still going to, they're habitual with it. You know, it's just the same as like an area that they'll make a hub scrape in, you know, that's going to be a hub scrape forever unless you destroy the ground around it. You know, it's like a telephone pole rubs. That's a sign. Yep. They are going to hit that rub every single year. Those are things that I always put into correlation with it when I am trying to find a new property too, is, or on public. You know, you might be able to go off the grid basically and find a little secluded spot to yourself and find that it's a honey hole. And I mean, it's worth the work. Let's just put it that way.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, this has been a great conversation about age class and mature level, you know, maturity and things like that. I wouldn't necessarily get too worked up about any of this stuff, though. It's fun to talk about, but
yeah.
If you're new to hunting or you're trying to take a step up, don't get too worried about it. I feel like the most important thing, because I think what's happened to me is I've, over the years, been so caught up in antler size and trying to kill. I got to kill a 4-year-old 150-inch buck. Like, that's my goal. I got to do it. Well, I'll tell you right now, it's not as cracked, you know, it's not as fun as it's cracked up to be.
Right.
And so getting out there and having fun and spending time with people, that's what I'm starting to lean towards these days. And so fill your tags is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I and I'm not going to disagree with that at all. I mean, I think that's a great mindset to it. I'm going to flip it a little bit and say, if your goal is a certain inch or certain age class or whatever, my only suggestion would be to use it as a ladder and just hit every rung on the way to the top. And then when you get to the top, don't forget that you can come back down too.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. No one ever says that. I love that. All right, Jason, man. Well, I appreciate you again, as always, taking time. If you want to find out more information about our podcast, you can go to iTunes or Spotify and you can find us there, or you can go to sportsmansempire.com, sportsmensempire.com. And you can find not only the How to Hunt Deer podcast, but all of the other podcasts that our network offers. So go check all of those out. Find us on Instagram. I actually have just started the How to Hunt Deer Instagram page as well. We didn't have that before. We have it now. And so there's going to be some content coming through there as well. Thank you very much for listening. Go give us a review, 5-star review, and we will talk to you next time. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.